Welcome to the podcast. I'm Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com. Today we'll be speaking with Dr. Brian Fennerty about fecal transplantation. Dr. Fennerty is a professor of medicine in the Division of Gastroenterology at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon, where he also serves as section chief of gastroenterology. Dr. Fennerty, my friend and voice of reason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Val.
To get us started, could you please explain what exactly is a fecal transplant?
I would be happy to. And just as a bit of background, the first thing that your blogosphere needs to understand is that we are populated, our gastrointestinal tract is just populated with good bacteria. They're not only good bacteria, they're bacteria that are essential for our health. So if we did not have bacteria in our colon and our small intestine, we would die. So fecal transplant is the repopulation of a person's normal bacteria population, what we call their flora, with bacteria, fecal bacteria, intestinal bacteria from somebody else because they have a disease that ostensibly would potentially benefit from some good bacteria being supplied to them.
So what exactly is involved in this transplant procedure?
Well, I knew you were going to force me to explain it.
And you're a gastroenterologist.
I was doing my best to dodge. So what happens and what was originally described was taking the feces from a healthy individual, basically spinning it down, taking the undigestible material out of it, leaving basically a pellet of bacteria, which probably is comprised of many, many hundreds of thousands of different species and quasi-species, and delivering it to the patient either orally down a nasogastric tube so it would be delivered to the small intestine or resuspended in an enema, and just like anybody else would take an enema, inserting it back up into the colon and in an effort to get these bacteria to take in that person's colon and hopefully populate and squeeze out bad bacteria if they're there, or in the case of a lack of good bacteria, just fill in that niche and survive and populate and be good for the patient.
So what are these fecal transplants purported to do exactly?
Well, and I kind of alluded to it in the first question, but the fecal transplants, the theory behind it is that some diseases are caused by an imbalance among the number of the appropriate good bacteria that we all have, either a lack of certain of those species because of exposure to antibiotics or other disease states, or the introduction of some bad bacteria because you've recently been hospitalized or exposed to these bad bacteria in the case of what we call C. diff or Clostridium difficile. And these new bacteria are either replacing the missing good bacteria or used to push out the bad bacteria by taking their space in this environment of the colon and small intestine.
So which specific diseases might this be helpful for?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Val, and the problem is that all of the information that we have on this is really based on a theoretical benefit and some observations among a small groups of patients that's been tried in. So the disease that has probably captured the most attention with this therapy that actually dates back more than two decades is this disease called C. difficile or Clostridium difficile-associated colitis. Another term for it is pseudomembranous colitis. Some of your listeners may be aware of this disease. It's got a lot of attention nationally in the last few months because of the epidemic rise in the number of people infected with it that have been in a hospital. But what happens here is that when patients get antibiotics or are exposed in a hospital, this bacteria, Clostridium difficile, kind of populates itself in a person's colon and small intestine. It releases toxins that cause a colitis, diarrhea, and abdominal discomfort, and it's actually potentially a fatal illness, although in most cases it's just a very annoying sort of illness or a morbid sort of illness. We can't seem to get Clostridium difficile to go away with other antibiotics very well. So the thinking behind it was, geez, this Clostridium difficile is set up shop. because the patient got antibiotics, which knocked off some of their good bacteria, leaving a space for this C. diff to now reside. So if we gave the good bacteria back to the patient, it would kind of edge the C. diff out of this home that it inhabited and make it go away. And there have been observations of people getting fecal transplants that have improved their symptoms or resolved their symptoms related to this C. difficile. You notice I use the term observations, though, Val, because in our world, the only way we can be absolutely certain, which sometimes we just can't be in medicine, absolutely certain that the treatment is benefiting the patient, not just time is benefiting the patient, is to do what we call a controlled trial, where a patient is given one treatment and another patient is given either another treatment or no treatment, and to see if the ultimate outcomes in those two groups are different. What we have in this fecal transplant literature is an awful lot of observations that patients seem to get better, and we like to think it's from the fecal transplants, but we don't know that because it could have been by just time and chance alone.
Now, obviously, there's been a lot of interest in replacing good bacteria with yogurt or lactobacillus type species. Why wouldn't that be more reasonable than, you know, repopulating with an entire group of species? You know, some are good and some are bad. What do you think about that?
It's actually a great question, and the whole issue of probiotics has kind of raised the awareness of this fecal transplantation. Probiotics are using what we know to be safe strains of specific bacteria, or in some cases of probiotics, a mixture of a few strains of bacteria to help repopulate the colon and small intestine with good bacteria to get the same benefits that we were just talking about with fecal transplantation. The real difference between these two issues is we still don't know which are the best probiotics, which things work best. The yogurt information, is, as you know, has gotten very popular, but we really don't know how much benefit people get from lactobacillus, which is the major bacteria found in yogurt, versus propionic bacteria that are found in other probiotic available agents. The fecal transplant folks would argue, I don't have to worry about whether this one bacteria is good or bad, because I know by using a fecal transplant, I'm giving the patient a whole lot, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of different species of bacteria, and some of those got to be good, and so I have a better chance of treating the disease. The probiotic folks will say, well, there's a lot of downside to fecal transplantation, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about in a second. And so why not use a pure strain that I know to be safe for the patient? So you're starting to see a split in these two camps. You know, the camp that says, you know, fecal transplant makes the most sense. It's the whole internal milieu of a healthy patient being given to this patient who has an illness. And the probiotic folks say, yeah, but there's some real safety issues there, and I don't have to worry about that with my single or few species that I know are good for the patient. The problem with the probiotic information is we have very little of it. And once again, as we have mainly observational studies, not these control trials, so we really don't know how much benefit they are making in these sort of cases either. So we're kind of operating in a real gray area with a lot of great theory, but not a lot of good evidence that one way or the other is good, much less better than the other.
So, you know, I have to go there. I have to ask you what the dangers of fecal transplantation are.
And you try to do this without being tongue-in-cheek, but the first issue with fecal transplantation is purely the aesthetics. You know, once you've got your kids out of diapers, most people don't like to think of feces. And if you talk to people about their stool, half the time you get the answer is, well, I never look at it. So, you know, just the idea of a fecal transplantation puts many, many, if not most patients off. But the real issue is one I think you were alluding to that I don't think patients may be aware of, and that's the potential for extreme danger with fecal transplantation. We transmit not only, bacteria, but viruses, protozoa, fungus, all kinds of critters in feces. And as I mentioned, whereas our intestinal contents are essential to good health, and most of the bacteria in stool samples are very beneficial and good for us bacteria, there is the potential for severe disease transmission, including viruses such as HIV, prions, the things that we're worried about in cattle, and cheap that cause brain injury and brain problems in people, to normal bacteria like E. coli and Shigella, which cause dysentery illnesses. So the great concern among the medical community is not only the aesthetic issues, but the potential for transmission of even deadly or life-threatening diseases that can't always be screened for and controlled for, even with careful laboratory testing of a candidate's stool specimen that they're going to be giving to another. So, you know, that is a huge issue that has not been well resolved, that is kind of hanging a cloud over this entire area. The probiotic folks would argue that's exactly why probiotics make more sense. But then again, we're back to the issue of only one or two bacteria coming in instead of hundreds of thousands that you get with a fecal transplant.
So you're saying it's hard enough to screen blood for disease, but imagine stool that has so many more organisms in it. It's nearly impossible to screen out all the potential pathogens that could infect the new host once the transplant is done, right?
Yeah, you know, laboratory testing now is so sophisticated that, you know, I hate to use the word impossible, but there is one group of infecting not organisms because they're not classified that way, and these are these prions. And I do think that it is impossible to declare a stool sample safe with current technologies. Maybe we'll overcome that, and you know, you and I will be able to say, you know, yeah, this is a safe treatment. But right now we have some, I think, substantial safety issues on top of the fact that we really don't know whether this stuff works. Be it in C. difficile or irritable bowel syndrome or inflammatory bowel disease like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. So you can see I have quite a few, I guess, cautionary flags up here, potentially harmful and without really good evidence that it works well in these diseases, makes me, just as a physician, somewhat cautious about recommending anything like this to a patient at this point in time.
And just to summarize then, Dr. Fennerty, what should Americans know about fecal transplants?
I think there are three things that I think that they should know about. One is it's not a new issue. It's been around for decades. Two is intuitively it makes sense. It is a logical and perhaps appropriate approach to many disease states involving not only the gastrointestinal tract but other organ systems as well. But the third thing is that, like a lot of things in medicine that appear promising, until we are sure that we can do this safely and that we help patients with the therapy, I think we have to temper our enthusiasm. And that's a very difficult thing to tell to somebody that has a disease, is that there's great promise, but it's not ready for prime time yet. So the take-home message is, it's an area that I think you're going to see a lot about, but it is not ready for prime time.
You've been listening to a podcast with Dr. Brian Fennerty. I'm Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com.